Hi friends, welcome to the Bible Project Daily Podcast. My name is Jeremy McCandless, and as I record this, it's the 10th of April 2024, and boy, have we just been through a windy, stormy night here on the northwest coast of England. I hope you're safe and secure wherever God has placed you this morning, this day. What we're going to think about today as we journey through the book of Numbers, we've reached Numbers chapter 4, is the idea of being where God has put you and preparing for God to move you on. Now I have to confess, the thought of moving home fills me with dread. I suppose at some point my wife and I are going to need to consider moving out of this family-sized home and finding something smaller. But for me, that's a can I prefer to kick down the road. However, despite my aversion to physically moving, I've come to realize that there's a lot to be learned from the process of moving. And surprisingly for me, as I look deeper into the book of Numbers, as I was preparing this series, I think I see some parallels between the principles of moving on in various aspects of our life. In fact, it's a discovery that I feel I've only fully understood in preparing for this particular Bible study as we've worked together through the Old Testament book of Numbers. Now you might be thinking, well, I've got no plans to move on. How does this apply to me? Well, the truth is, I think the principles found today in this passage in Numbers chapter 4 extend way beyond the act of just physically relocating. They offer valuable insights that are applicable to other areas of our life, to being prepared to go spiritually wherever God needs to take us. So let's take a closer look at Numbers chapter 4 and extract some of the universal principles that transcend the mere idea of moving home. Join with me today as we do that together on the Bible Project Daily Podcast. Okay friends, welcome. The passage today is a long one again. We're going to cover the whole passage. It actually is divided. I'm splitting it into roughly four today. There are three family scenarios where some planning and revelation is given, and then it pulls it together. So I'll go through the sections of the passage today rather than reading the whole thing at the start, and then unpack it a little bit as we go along, and then try and draw it all together and see what it means. Hope that's good for you. So initially it's going to tell us about the Kohathites, and this is what it says. Verse 1, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, take a census of the Kohathite branch of the Levites by their clans and families. Count all the men from 30 to 50 years of age who come to serve in the work at the tent of meeting. This is the work of the Kohathites at the tent of meeting, the care of the most holy things. When the camp is on the move, Aaron and his sons are to go in and take down the shielding curtain and put it over the Ark of the Covenant. They are then to cover the curtain with a durable leather and spread a cloth of solid blue over that and put the poles in place. Over the table of the presence, they are to spread a blue cloth and put on the plates, dishes and bowls, and the jars for drink offerings, and the bread that is continually there, that is to remain on it. They are to spread a scarlet cloth over them, cover that with the durable leather, and put the poles in place. They are to take a blue cloth and cover the lampstand, that is for light, together with its lamps, its wick trimmers, and trays, and all its jars of olive oil used to supply it. Then they are to wrap it and all its accessories in a covering of the durable leather and put it on a carrying frame. Over the gold altar they are to spread a blue cloth and cover that with durable leather and put the poles in place. They are to take all the articles used for ministering in the sanctuary, wrap them in a blue cloth, cover them with that durable leather and put them on a carrying frame. They are to remove the ashes from the bronze altar and spread a purple cloth over it. They are to place on it all the utensils used for ministering at the altar, including the fire pans, meat forks, shovels, and sprinkling bowls. Over it they are to spread a covering of the durable leather and put the poles in place. After Aaron and his sons have finished covering the holy furnishings and all the holy articles, and when the camp is ready to move, only then are the Kohathites to come and do the carrying. But they must not touch the holy things, or they will die. The Kohathites are to carry these things that are in the tent of meeting. Eleazar, son of Aaron, the priest, is to have charge over the oil for the light and the fragrant incense, the regular grain offering, and the anointing oil. He is to be in charge of the entire tabernacle and everything in it, including its holy furnishings and articles. Then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "See that the Kohathite tribal clans are not destroyed from among the Levites, so that they may live and not die when they come near the holy things. Do this for them." Aaron and his sons are to go into the sanctuary and assign to each man his work and what he has to carry. But the Kohathites must not go in to look at the holy things, even for a moment, or they will die. Okay, we'll stop right there. It's a complicated passage. It seems to have designating tasks in a slightly repetitious way, explains how each of those principles should be applied to each of the tasks. But here's the situation. The children of Israel are at Mount Sinai. They've constructed the tabernacle. Now the goal is to enable them to move from Sinai to the promised land. But wait a moment. Do you remember how many people we're actually dealing with here? Remember? Over 2 million? Yeah, you're right, you heard it. 2 million plus. 2 million people now need to be relocated from Sinai to the promised land. So how are we going to do that? What's the plan? Well, the plan revolves around moving the tabernacle. The focal point of this is now revealed to us in this chapter in Numbers. The detail involved in enabling that to happen and this massive congregation of people, as they're described, to be moved. Now, essentially, this chapter is divided into three parts. I've just read the first part of it. Although there's a fourth part to conclude it, we'll touch on that later. But each of these three initial parts comprise of the detail of one of the three families of the tribe of Levi. Remember those families? We mentioned them. They were identified in the previous chapter. Now the detail of what they're going to do is described in this one. We'll circle back to that in a moment. So, what's been set in place here is the principles by which this monumental task can be tackled. It's going to need what we would today call some serious project management, which is why we see exactly that here, which is why we see each family group being assigned specific responsibilities. Now, what I read to you just now pertains to the first family, the Kohathites. We will get to the Girgashites and the Merarites in due time. But let's just break down the verses that I've just read and summarize for them. In the opening couple of verses, God, we see, instructing Moses to conduct a census of this Kohathite family. But this time the census is for all the individuals aged 30 to 50. Does it sound familiar? Well, it should. It's reminiscence of the census that was initially conducted in chapter 1. But on that occasion, it focused on men aged 20 and older from across all the tribes. However, the tribe of Levi was excluded from that census. That census, those counted in chapter 1, were deemed simply as the men of war, those eligible for military service. But here we're doing a census from among the family lines of Levi to find those allocate service in the tabernacle. And for this type of role, the age requirement is raised to 30. I suppose it's worth noting the significance of this age requirement. It seems you were able to join the equivalent of the military at 20, but in order to fulfill any role in the tabernacle, you had to be over the age of 30 and of that designated family line and tribe. This, I believe, if nothing else, underscores the importance and responsibility of leadership roles of that day priestly service and the responsibility of leadership role within church communities to this day. Anyway, moving on to verse 4, we learn that the Kohathite family is tasked with the handling of what are described as these most sacred items from within the tabernacle and preparing the camp, if you like, for the journey. This is a critical role and something that will be looked at further as we continue not only through this chapter but through the entire book of Numbers. So let's break it down what we've just looked at so far today. Since the beginning, the opening of this book, we've seen, if you like, the people gearing up for a move. Specifically, remember, this is the move from Mount Sinai to the Promised Land. And to make that happen, well, the people are going to need to get organized. That's the crux of this chapter. Each family is going to be designated responsibilities. And in this first case, the Kohathite family is tasked with handling the most sacred items of the tabernacle, even including the veil, and using that to cover the ark itself. Considering the specifics of the verses, in verse 7 we saw a mention of the table of showbread. They were responsible for packing up in this standard way. Verse 9 addressed the lampstand. Then verse 10 instructed them how to pack all the utensils. And in verse 11 there's mentions of the altar. And then in 12, they're tasked with handling all the utensils of service from around the altar, right down to the actual ashes themselves left behind. That's in verse 13. Every implement is included, did you notice? Fire pans, forks, shovels, basins, all of them to be covered with animal leather. In fact, other Bible versions suggest it's actually badger skin. Anyway. What's interesting is the directive is then pulled together in the closing verses of verses 17 to 20 for the Kohathites anyway. And here it specifies that the sons of Aaron are to be assigned their respective tasks. Essentially, everyone here is being given job descriptions. That's right. This is akin to what we would today call a project management with job descriptions for those involved. A clear outlining of the duties and responsibilities for everyone involved. So the first 20 verses of chapter 4 focus on the Kohathite family and their responsibility for handling the most sacred of items. They're the ones who are going to pack up and carry these holy artifacts from place to place. But now let's move on to the second family, the Gershonites, and their duties are outlined starting from verse 21 again, and again it will begin with a survey. Let's hear what it says. The Lord said to Moses, "Take a census also of the Gershonites, by their families and clans. Count all the men from 30 to 50 years of age who come to serve in the work of the tent of meeting. This is the service of the Gershonite clans in their carrying and their other work. They are to carry the curtains of the tabernacle, that is the tent of meeting, its covering and its outer covering of durable leather, the curtains for the entrance to the tent of meeting, the curtains for the courtyard surrounding the tabernacle and altar, the curtains for the entrance to the courtyard, the ropes, and all the equipment used in the service of the tent. The Gershonites are to do all that needs to be done with these things. All their service, whether carrying or doing other work, is to be done under the direction of Aaron and his sons. You shall assign to them all the responsibilities that they are to carry. This is the service of the Gershonite clans at the tent of meetings. Their duties are to be under the direction of Ithamar, son of Aaron the priest." That's Numbers from chapter 4, verses 20 to 28. So let's quickly break that down again. It begins with, again, the Lord initiating a directive. Again, to take a census of the sons of Gershon this time, specifically focusing on males, age 30 to 50 again, those who are fit to serve in the tabernacle. In it, we see a shift of focus onto their designated tasks. Here, the specific responsibilities of this family are outlined, and they are tasked, it seems, well, mainly with carrying curtains, isn't it? Curtains of the tabernacle itself, along with all the coverings, curtains and screens, the hangings around the courtyard, and all the furnishings associated with those particular items. And essentially, again, their responsibility is for the physical transportation and handling of all these, how shall I describe them, components, sacred components of the tabernacle. And verse 27 reinforces the importance of this by highlighting this authority structure, emphasizing that the duties are to be placed under the supervision, well, of Aaron and one of his sons directly. Okay, the text then picks up again in verse 29 and onwards, and instructions are given regarding, again, the census and the specific tasks that are going to be assigned this time to the son of Merari, the Merarianites. Okay, 29, we pick it up. Count the Merarianites by their clans and families. So it's the Lord telling Moses again, another census. Count all the men from 30 to 50 years of age who come to serve in the work at the tent of meeting. As part of all their service at the tent, they are to carry the frames of the tabernacle, its crossbars, posts and bases, as well as the posts of the surrounding courtyard, with their bases, tent pegs, ropes, all their equipment and everything related to their use. Assign to each of the men the specific things he is to carry. Then verse 33 closes this section by saying, this is the service of the Merarianite clans as they work at the tent of meeting, under the direction of Ithamar, son of Aaron, the priest. So here again, they are designated, this particular family clan, to carry, well, structural components, they look like, don't they, of the tabernacle itself. Things like the boards, the bars, the pillars, the sockets, and the other furnishings relating to that. And this time, we see oversight is to be provided by Ithamar, again one of Aaron's sons, ensuring that each member of the Merarite family fulfills their designated responsibilities properly. And then the final part of this passage concludes with a summary of the total number of individuals involved in this momentous task of moving the people and the transportation of the tabernacle along with them. This will now include the sons we've seen, includes the sons of Kohath, Gershon and Merari, with a grand total of 8,580 revealed. So reading from verse 34 to the close of the chapter, it tells us this. Moses and Aaron and the leaders of the community counted the Kohathites by their clans and families. All the men from 30 to 50 years of age who came to serve in the work at the tent of meeting, counted by clans, there were 2,750. This was the total of all the Kohathite clans who served at the tent of meeting. Moses and Aaron counted them according to the Lord's command through Moses. The Gershonites were counted by their clans and families, all the men from 30 to 50 years of age who came to serve in the work of the tent of meeting, counted by their clans and families, there were 2,630. This was the total amount of the Gershonite clans who served at the tent of meeting. Moses and Aaron counted them according to the Lord's command. The Merarites were counted by their clans and families, all the men from 30 to 50 years of age again, who came to serve in the work at the tent of meeting. Counted by their clans, there were 3,200, and this was the total in the Merarianite clans. Moses and Aaron counted them according to the Lord's command through Moses. So Moses, Aaron, and the leaders of Israel counted all the Levites by their clans and families. All the men from 30 to 50 years of age who came to do work in serving and carrying the tent of meeting, they numbered 8,580. At the Lord's command through Moses, each was assigned his work, told what to carry, thus they were counted just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Okay, so finally the chapter finishes and we're given a summary, again repeating everything that's happened before, a total numbering of the individuals involved, and the passage concludes by telling us simply that Moses fulfilled the Lord's commandment by numbering each person according to the service and the tasks that they were delegated. So in essence, this whole chapter is simply seen to outline for us the meticulous organization and execution of responsibilities that were necessary for moving the whole tabernacle along with the people, underscoring the importance of there needing to be planning, order, and adherence to instructions, and in this case, of course, their divine instructions. But what can we glean from this passage today? Is it one of those passages that you just read through and move on to the next one? Well, it's very clear to me that the primary objective here was simply to record for us the organization of the movement of the tabernacle and the people from Sinai into the Promised Land. Now, as we've traveled through Numbers so far, there's already one recurring theme beginning to emerge, isn't there? The emphasis on God's orderly nature. But now I want to highlight another aspect and to truly grasp the significance of what I think this chapter is trying to teach us. I think we need to backtrack for a moment. Let me rewind you all the way back to the story of Abraham as seen overall, the overall story of Abraham as revealed in the book of Genesis. In that, we see God promise Abraham, and of course by nature, his generations that follow, Isaac and Jacob, the land that we today know pretty much as Palestine. However, instead of ending up there, their descendants find themselves in Egypt as slaves. Eventually, God appointed Moses to lead those people out of Egypt, and they brought them to the base of Mount Sinai, where they constructed a mobile tabernacle, a place of meeting and worshipping with God. And we saw that event worked out for us in the closing section of Exodus and through Leviticus. Now we find ourselves at the beginning of Numbers, and the goal is now very clear. It is to move this massive assembly of people along with this tabernacle that they have meticulously constructed from Sinai into the Promised Land. And how are they going to achieve such a monumental task? Well, you get it, God is going to get these people organized. And the initial four chapters of Numbers serve as nothing else but a detailed description of the preparation and the organization for the momentous journey that's facing them. The subsequent chapters will detail the journey itself, but in these first chapters we've looked at together, we simply see God laying the groundwork. In chapter 1, they conduct a census of all able-bodied men, so they're enabled to be prepared for war if they meet it. In chapter 2, the 12 tribes are organized around the tabernacle, showcasing God's desire to be at the center of this community, this massive congregation of people. In chapter 3, we see the alignment of the spiritual duties of the Levites, the setting apart of people to take care of the spiritual life of the community. And in chapter 4, the focus now shifts to their responsibilities that everyone's to adopt during this process of traveling and moving around. The chapter goes even deeper into the principles of organization and preparation beyond anything we've witnessed so far, and certainly in the book of Numbers, you might say, in the whole Bible up to this point. So what we're seeing in this chapter is not just the formulation of the plan, but also the ability to implement that plan by assigning specific tasks to individual people and groups of people at some detail, as you'll see. So this involves careful coordination and organization. This chapter is effectively about how once you have a plan, once you have a purpose revealed to you, it's about the literal assigning of tasks, providing supervision. In fact, some would say it's the first time in history we see what lies at the heart of effective organization, project management, bringing some great plan to fruition, both by what you do and by also saying what you should not do. It's crucial that within this, God includes prohibitions and limitations upon people and what they can do. That's embedded within the plan itself also. The principle of delineating what is allowed and what is prohibited is deeply ingrained across all Bible teachings. Take, for instance, God's command to Adam right at the beginning. He was permitted to eat from any tree in the garden except one. Similarly, in the Ten Commandments, we find a positive and negative list of injunctions. The idea is further reinforced if we travel into the New Testament. In places like 1 Timothy chapter 5, detailed instructions are given regarding the support of widows, including specific guidelines, but importantly, restrictions as well. So what we see here is, well, let's reflect for a moment on that interesting biblical passage regarding the care of widows from 1 Timothy. You've got to remember, in ancient times, there wasn't a social security system in any way like we know today. Instead, it was seen wholly as the family's responsibility to support the elderly. And if there was a widow with a family, they were expected to provide for her. However, if she had no family, the church, the wider community, was to step in and offer assistance. Interesting, there are also restrictions included in that package on how that support should be offered. Actually saying that widows under the age of 60 should not benefit from this, as indeed they likely had the possibility to remarry. So this illustrates right from Old Testament to New that the Bible not only provides directive as to what to do, but also what not to do, highlighting the importance of comprehensive planning, incorporating all aspects of it. So what we have here in this chapter is not just the formulation of a plan, but the implementation of the plan assigned to specific tasks and individuals. But it includes certain prohibitions and limitations within the plan itself. So in essence here, the big picture here is understanding the importance of, before embarking on any journey, whether it be physical or for us spiritual, the importance of clear planning, the setting of responsibilities, and the effective supervision is highlighted as a principle here when it's anything that we are doing as community, corporately together. The principles gleaned from this biblical passage through repetition are meant to underscore the importance, the significance of having comprehensive planning and meticulous execution in bringing God's people to any future journey of faith. Now, when it comes to the community expression of our faith, which of course today would be reflected through our local church structures, well, I believe that in terms of that, this passage, I believe that there are three helpful elements revealed here: the one of planning, the one of organization, and the one of actually administering it, bringing it to fruition. So firstly, planning entails establishing that clear purpose, setting goals, defining objectives, designing programs, creating schedules even, perhaps even allocating budget. So the church, the primary purpose of the church, of course, is ultimately to glorify God. So as for goals, the primary objective to achieve that is simply to make disciples. There it was commanded for us, given to us in what is called the Great Commission, the Great Project, Matthew 28. Acts chapter 2 actually provided the blueprint for achieving this, telling us that we need to do that by emphasizing teaching within the fellowship, having fellowship together, and also the breaking of bread. In other words, the fellowshipping together through the meals, the Lord's Supper, and of course, most importantly, prayer. Additionally, things like including training leaders, training people to express their gifting, that's outlined for us in Ephesians 4. And to do all this, it's got to involve some sort of setting of objectives, short-term goals that support the overarching goal of the church community, which is making disciples. For instance, one of the key ways of doing that, the New Testament reveals, is simply to teach from the Bible. That should be central to the mission of any church or church community. But the next step in order to do that should be to appoint someone as a pastor, if you like, someone to lead the congregation, and primarily to lead the congregation in that way, by teaching from the Bible. Now, in order to underpin that, the next principle is the organization, which involves the structuring of the activities and the assigning of roles of people within that church community context. This could and should involve the organizing of regular weekly services, appointing perhaps someone to lead the music, or maybe even have someone who's appointed to lead the worship, enabling the pastor, the person in that leadership role, to focus on the preparation and the study of the Word of God. But of course, to do all these other things that support that core ministry, there may be need to be formed other committees for various ministries of the church, much like we see tasks being delegated to groups of people here. And lastly, the administration of this great task. That which pertains to overseeing the implementation of the plans, ensuring its smooth operation, that's going to involve certain schedules, regular activities being created, as well as particular events. And of course, managing resources effectively. And for local churches today, that can mean people in roles of treasurer to manage the financial resources of the community. So in summary, we can see that effective management, project management, still today in a church setting, involves the same sort of meticulous planning, structural organisation and competent administration to fulfil the ultimate goal of glorifying God and taking people on a discipleship journey, making disciples. Now, there's a lot more that could be said about these topics, but I'm convinced that the basic principles of the management and the administration to fruition of this call, they're seen here, right here, in the book of Numbers, in the most basic foundational principles described for us here in this section today. It's fascinating how God operates with order in our organization following these principles. There's nothing chaotic about what's going on here. So in summary, this chapter, well, what I've suggested and discussed is it applies not only to what's going on here, but to every aspect of our life, from our Christian life to being involved in supporting or perhaps even starting a church, even down to the very simplest things like planning a family holiday together. But in every aspect of our lives, in every aspect of our spiritual life, every aspect of our church life, everything, Sunday school, children's church, worship ministry, fellowship clubs, you name it, wherever it is, something as important as running a ministry or a community of faith for the glory of God, or right down to something as simple as just planning a family outing, the principle God is saying here is you need to plan. You need to assign people to specific tasks and you need to support them to ensure that God's overall plan is carried out. And a big lesson here is that personal selection is key. We've got to put the right people in the right job. If you do that, you can sleep at night. If you do that, you can see Aaron and his family were allocated the right people in the right jobs, and we've got to do that also. In reality, if you put the wrong person in the wrong job, you will spend your nights praying for miracles to get out of the mess you have created, rather than just the miracles and the power of God being seen to work in the community for good. Now, do you notice, friends, though, that God doesn't really form committees? He chooses individuals to lead specific tasks and delegates the roles to those people within it. Heaven save our churches from committees, one would say. What's that expression? A camel is just a horse that was designed by a committee. Anyway, what we see here, back to this passage, in conclusion, let me say, this was done in order to allow Moses to lead the Israelites out of Egypt, and we will eventually see Joshua lead and conquer the promised land, and the story will carry on. But in that, along the way, on that journey, each and every person is allocated their role. They're given a job description, and in doing that, God ensures not only that the community is able to fulfill that goal, but through that, God ensures that the individuals are equipped and enabled to fulfill the overall role, the overall plan, the overall journey that God wants to take this great congregation of Israel on. And our job today is just as believers to try and organize our lives and our community expression of our Christian faith to effectively fulfill the mission that God has given us today. And I do hope that that gives you some tools in how we might do that together. Thanks for being with me today. Okay, that's it for today, friends. We'll be back tomorrow. And we'll look at the next chapter of Numbers, chapter 5. Which gives us some hints of, now that we've established the right way of doing it, how to keep everything right and proper and on course to keep achieving that. So I do hope I'll see you back here again tomorrow. Can I remind you, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you're getting your podcast from. It's free, always freely available. Everything around it that I publish is in the public domain for you to use in whatever way you can. And you can subscribe to it from where you're getting it. If you're not seeing active links to things like the transcript and the episode notes, then you can visit us on the Bible Project at buzzsprout.com. That's the place where it's hosted, and you'll certainly find active links to all those other places there, like the episode notes, like the transcript of what I've said, but also the social networks and other places that you can connect us. Even Patreon, where you can become part of that core supportive community that is enabling this adventure, this journey we're going on together through the whole Bible to be fulfilled. So thanks for being with me today. I'll see you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed tomorrow, I trust, on the Bible Project Daily Podcast. Bye-bye now.